will come to order. It is Wednesday, April 17, 2013. We're going to not have the work session on House Bill 2597 today. The paperwork isn't quite ready. We'll carry that over till a future date. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 3 and ask Senator Courtney and Senator Farioli to come forward.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 3 changes Commission on Indian Services to include two members of Senate and two members of House Representatives, removes requirement that Commission have members from Portland Urban Area and Willamette Valley Area to represent non-reservation Indians, allows for appointment of one non-voting member from area in which non-reservation Indians reside and who is associated with Indian Health Care Improvement Act, declares emergency is effective upon passage. You do have a fiscal statement on the measure, a no revenue statement. It comes to you from the Senate floor, 30-0.
Distinguished colleagues, welcome. Please proceed.
Chair, who do you want to go first, please? Would you do something?
He's pointing at you with what looks like a gun.
Chair Gert, I remember. You were a very young man. You're being disrespectful. Vice Chair Hoyle, Vice Chair Hicks, and members of the Rules Committee and the great House of Representatives. Thank you for letting me come here today. I'm Peter Courtney. I live in, I used to give my street address. My wife doesn't want me to do that anymore. So I live in North Salem. And my district is number 11. I'm a state senator. And that includes portions of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. And thank you for allowing me to testify in support of Senate Bill 3, which I introduced to allow the membership of the Indians Commission to be increased by two, one additional state senator and one additional member of the House of Representatives. The commission was created in 1975 to improve services to Native Americans in our great state. Its members are appointed jointly by the Senate President and the Speaker of the House to two-year terms, and then the commission gets together and they choose their own officers, which are chosen for 1 year. The body advises the legislative branch, the executive branches, on ways to improve communications and coordination with the tribes. The commission serves as a forum for exchange of information between state government and the commissions. Now, currently, I'm responsible for making appointments to 75 boards, commissions, and task force, and that number is increasing as we speak. I don't know how to say this, but you can't imagine how difficult it is to find senators that are willing and able to serve on all these boards that also are motivated enough to show up at meetings. I'm not complaining, it's just that there's 30 members of the Senate, and it's just very difficult. It's interesting, there is almost one powerful exception, and that's the Indian Commission. The individuals who serve on that, they are tenacious about it. I remember Kate Brown, when she was on it, she would die to stay on that commission. And then the gentleman to my right, the Honorable Theodore Farioli, the House of the Senate Republican leader, I mean, this thing he guards with his life, he guards with everything, all his weapons, he guards in every way as possible, he wants to be on it. And I can understand why it's highly coveted. But this year, I had an individual come in who also wanted to be on it. And I'm talking straight up, Arnie Robler. And he wanted as much as life itself. And so rather get into a DR thing, I felt, why don't we just add a member to the House and the Senate, neither of which can be of the same party. So it will be a Democrat and Republican. And so that's what I did. And I didn't know if the bill would get very far. The tribes are also here. They, and rather than describe their amendment, they had an amendment as well. And so we're here today with this piece of legislation. You're good enough to hear. And I hope that you will think it's worthy enough to even hold a work session on it. So with that, I'll be still and allow the good Senator Ted Farioli to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I also am here to support this worthwhile bill, and I do strongly believe that we as a legislature should make an additional investment of time.
Senator, I need your name for the record.
Ted Farioli.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. First of all, the commission, as the president testified, was created In an unusual manner, it is a state legislative commission on Indian services. When I talked to Governor Victor Attia about the history of this commission, he basically said that he messed up. He didn't know at the time he was going to be the governor. And he later wished that he'd put the Commission for Indian Services in the governor's office. And I thought that was a telling and informative statement, because it communicated to me the tremendous value of the Commission on Indian Services. And I think that it is exactly in the right place at the right time. The bill before you will expand the membership of the Commission on Indian Services to include two members from each chamber and two members from each party. So we have an opportunity to have an expansion of the potential membership that will allow all of us to equally participate in what I think is an experiment in government-to-government relations that just doesn't exist anywhere else. We can't find an analogy nationally. So I guess what I would tell you is that I regard the opportunity for members of the commission to sit with the nine treaty tribes as a diplomatic mission. It's an opportunity for us to understand more about the tribes, how they operate, the things that they not only need from state government, but need to express to state government. We have an opportunity to essentially bridge cultures, to work with a group of folks who have a unique vision of what Oregon is and what it should be. So I guess what I would say is that I think we ought to expand our commitment to government relations, expand our opportunity for interfacing with the nine treaty tribes, and make an opportunity available for more members to participate directly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for our colleagues? None? Thank you very much.
Somebody asked me a question.
Well, I was told there were a number of questions about this bill.
This is my most favorite committee room, and I don't understand. I mean, there's been very...
Representative Hoyle actually does have a question.
He's been very quiet and very... I want somebody to ask me a question.
I knew you would.
Mr. Chairman, are witnesses allowed to solicit questions from the panel?
I don't think it's necessary. Representative Hoyle has...
I actually had a question, but I forgot that I had one. And I just remembered. Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. I think it's an important bill, and as you said, it's at the right time, and it's the right bill. But I'm wondering, what can we do to get the same kind of interest that we have on this board for other boards and commissions from our esteemed Senate colleagues?
That's a good question.
Chair Garrett. I'll decide if it's a good question. You know, that's you're sitting there already passing judgment. There's not much you can do. I mean, the committees are what they are. The task force are what they are. The interests are what they are. This is special. You know the flags out here, right? You notice there's nine flags, the tribe flags. I mean, this is so much a part of who we are and what we are, not only in terms of our communities and our state, but our nation. So this is magnetism that is involved with this. You could not simply transfer over to all these other things. You just simply cannot do it. And so I'm constantly frustrated, because I understand the workload situation, trying to find individuals that are genuinely interested in the subject matter. And outside of if you're not interested in the subject matter, I don't know how you do it, Representative Hall. I just don't know how you do it. This in itself, I've never served in the Indian Commission because others just pushed me out of the way, and they almost threatened me with my life if I got in the way of them being on this. And it's that thing. I don't see that in any other committee that I appoint to what exists here. And I don't think you can transfer it. I don't think you can will it. I think it's just, this is by herself, and that's what it is. So it's a poor answer to a question that's very well asked when I stop and think about it. I just can't get any better than that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
This is a unique opportunity, very special. It's really something to be allowed to have the portfolio, to have the trust of the body to sit with the leaders of the nine treaty tribes. And mm-hmm. and hear their logic, their processes, their values being expressed on such a wide variety of issues. So I don't know of another committee or commission that would have the same sort of charge or the same set of opportunities. As I said, I regard it as the legislator's opportunity to participate in diplomacy with sovereign nations. This is where sovereignty is expressed fully. But there are other committees in this building that have a certain amount of gravitas, and I know people serve, they love those commissions and committees. Legislative Administrative Committee is one where I see people deeply committed to the functioning of this institution. Another one is the Capital Foundation. So there are some committees in this building that do have the same sort of interest. When you talk about others like the Tall Red Fescue Commission, I can see why people who grow red fescue would be interested, but I can see why others might not be so deeply interested. But there are several committees that I think here call forth a little higher commitment. Certainly the chiefest among those, I would say, is the Commission on Indian Services.
Follow-up question?
Just a comment. Representative Hoyle? And thank you. I think that was very well said by both of you, and we appreciate the Senate perspective. It's a little different in the House. We have more people, and maybe just we're newer, but we have a lot of interest in a lot of different areas, and we so appreciate you bringing this forward and the interest of our good Senate colleagues, and we appreciate your service.
Mr. Chairman, I think the leadership in the House will very highly value the opportunity to appoint two of its members.
We will. Yes, we will.
And I'm sure it'll be much appreciated by the members who serve. I know that will be true for the President in the Senate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you both very much for making the time to come to our committee. I see no additional witnesses on this bill, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 3 and open a work session on Senate Bill 3. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hicks moves Senate Bill 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
We do have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It probably should have come under the public hearing part of it, but I'm wondering about the other part of the other changes that the bill does. It also makes some changes in other membership, right, other than the legislative. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I think there might be some representatives from the tribes here. Perhaps they could.
They are. No one signed up to speak, but is there anybody who'd like to be heard on this bill?
I just have a question about it. Yeah.
Please come forward.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde.
Okay. It's just a question about the change, dropping the Willamette Valley representative and making a change in the Portland representative. Could you say something about that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Dembro, a couple of technical changes. Had to take the 13 to 15 in terms of potential members. That doesn't mean every spot has to be filled. As you mentioned, deleted the Willamette Valley representative. That position had been vacant for the last 12 years. We added a may adopt a member with an Indian health care background that serves from the urban area. Those are non-voting members, and those are elected by the actual commission membership themselves. So those are the technical changes that were made to the bill.
Those seem like very good changes to me. Thank you. I especially appreciate the Indian Health representative.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Justin. Oh, don't go yet. Representative Holby.
I guess maybe an obvious question. Do you support adding more legislators to your commission?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby.
Only one good answer to that question.
What's that?
Only one good answer to that question.
Absolutely, we do.
That's the best answer.
All right. We have a motion on the floor to move Senate Bill 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The motion carries, and Representative Hicks will carry that bill. We're going to go out of order. So the next, actually, I guess we're going to go in order. So we're going to open a public hearing on HJR 27. Ms. Seiler, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Kenmer, State Representative, District 39. Appreciate you having the hearing. I'll try to keep this brief. We have a lot of other business to attend to, but I think it's worth a little bit of discussion. You know, it was interesting. It's the bill is based on some of my experience of coming in 2009 and discovering a remarkably more partisan legislature than I left in 1995. And difficulty even getting a hearing on a bill that had my name on it. And then we went to 3030, and it was an interesting experience. That half gavel was fascinating and resulted in a very different agenda. And I think, from my perspective, a good one, because this year I think we have fewer technical corrections than we typically have. I think there was some advantage in having more people involved in the process and reflecting on it. And I thought we got a better product. We certainly got a more centrist agenda. And as I was stewing about this before the session began, I remembered back to the days when I used to do psychotherapy. And towards the end of therapy, I'd always ask my patients, what have you learned? And I thought that was a good question for me to ask myself about this. And I think and the reason I asked those was to crystallize in people's minds what they had learned and also to help them develop plans to avoid regression. And so what did I learn? Well, I think in my 4 years, I learned that partisanism can be very brutal and is not always in the best interests of the public. 3030 was remarkably inclusive and was a very different process. And that one of the things that was unique about that was that to a significant degree, all 60 members of the House were involved in the process and had a role. And instead of it being primarily one party and practically 15 people or less, all of us played some of a role and distributed that responsibility more broadly. Also think that we had a more centrist agenda, and it was not particularly partisan, and the extremes at either the left or the right were gone, and in my mind, as a representative who's charged with the best interest of the public, I think, in my view, the best interests of the public are better served. And finally, it seemed to me that with 28% of the people not registered as either a Republican or a Democrat, it's interesting that we have a system that's based on a majority party when the majority party is not a majority party. So that's how I came to the suggestion that we have a vote of 40 votes instead of 31. It's the last time one party had 40 or more votes was 1953. So it seemed like just an arbitrary note at two-thirds. I'm not sure that it's a sacred number, but it would force bipartisan cooperation. And it was interesting. I was kissing my lucky stars a couple of days ago, and unfortunately it didn't work out that way because I thought yesterday we're going to have the PERS bill and would be the perfect example in my mind of the 40 vote because there's some grief about the current PERS bill, 822, because there are a few Democrats who think it's too severe and would like to be let off. And, of course, most of the Republicans don't think it's harsh enough. And if we had to have 40 votes, it would be a little bit more in the center. There would be those who probably would think it was too strong, and they'd be able to vote no, and those who thought it was too strong, not strong enough, they'd be able to vote no. But we would have a more centrist kind of approach to major issues like that. And I think it would help with a 40-vote minimum help limit some of the extremes that sometimes prevail. Another piece of it that I think would be helpful is that when you talk to people like Phil Lang, there was a time when the speaker was principally an administrative function. And I think it would be remarkable to move back to a time where that the job is administering the process rather than running the show. And that's what I think this offers. And finally, After coming out of an extremely bitter campaign in 2008, I've been a strong supporter of campaign reform and also found that practically it's very difficult to achieve under our current system, both for financial reasons and power reasons. And what this would do is it would change that majority designation from being so all-powerful and so important. And I think that that would likely result in less money going into campaigns because the outcome is not so critical and it would result in less vicious ones. So anyhow, I appreciate the opportunity to just share my thoughts about the lessons that I've learned and how I think that it might be an innovative way to change our system. And we'll see. There may be a little interest in an initiative, and we might have a little fun with this yet. And I appreciate it. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond or comments.
Senator Berger.
Yeah. Representative, thank you for bringing this, and thank you for your comments. I agree with you that the sort of partisan nature of what we do gets to be extreme. I'm not totally sure this is the answer, but I think it is part of an answer, and I appreciate you bringing it and your words today.
Thank you. And if I may respond to that, too, this bill was done before this session. It's not reflective of this session, and I think there have been some remarkable efforts to not repeat some of the things of 2009, and I need to say that. And the Speaker, I think, has worked with me in a very cooperative way on several of my bills, but it's just kind of a philosophical issue that I want to be sure we presented.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A proposal like this is really a proposal to weaken the capacity of the legislature to do business, because the chances of raising a supermajority vote are substantially less than the chances of raising a majority vote in on anything. California recently tried this approach with a requirement that a budget may be adopted only with a two-thirds vote in both houses. California quickly repealed that requirement because the effect of it was to require much larger bloated budgets in order to gather the necessary votes in order to adopt the budget in the legislature, weakening the capacity of the legislature to actually do its business, to write budgets that work, and so forth. So we've had that experiment. In Oregon, we have a 3/5 vote requirement to raise revenue, and we have a 2/3 vote requirement to make changes in some criminal sentencing rules. In both instances, the result of that, so far at least, has been to make it more difficult to actually get the business of the people done in a way that will benefit the people in the long run. If I were to write a proposal, and in fact I have written proposals, to make changes in the Constitution around supermajority vote, it would be the opposite. It would be to remove the requirements that we have now for supermajority votes, except for the requirement of a supermajority vote to refer a revision of the Constitution and a supermajority vote to override a veto, because I believe that the legislature needs more capacity to do its work, not less. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I may respond.
Sure.
I guess a couple of my thoughts, and I think those are of interest and possibilities. On the other hand, I guess I see something from a different perspective. I think the 1,200 to 1,400 bills that we add each biennium is a very substantial number, and I think less would be better. I think that a lot of times we get off in, particularly where we have partisan agendas, we get off into one extreme or another. Secondly, I guess that I think the 30-30 proved that we could have an alternative to gridlock. We certainly had that alternative in 2010 and 11. And we chose to work together. I think 40 votes has the potential of doing some gridlock, or it has the potential of folks doing their constitutional job and working together. And finally, to the point about 36 votes, I think that it is good to make the job of the legislature harder. I think easier makes it more partisan. and a smaller group has control. I think when you have more, you have to have a broader agenda. It's a good point. California is a case in point of where, you know, if, and frankly, the federal government to some degree, our bills are getting so inclusive that they're unaffordable. But that's a risk, I guess.
So doesn't the U.S. Senate kind of operate as a counterexample to what you're saying? I mean, effectively now we're requiring supermajorities for ordinary legislation with the increasing use of the filibuster, and it doesn't seem to have promoted the kind of bipartisan cooperation that you're talking about. So I guess I'm with Representative Berger. I agree with the sentiment here. There was a lot about our 30-30 session that I liked very much, but I don't know that setting up this procedural requirement is going to lead to the kind of results you're hoping for.
Well, I guess that, and I can't disagree about some of the dysfunction in Washington, D.C. On the other hand, I think one of the unique things about our system is that we have a substantial number of locally elected people. And there's pretty darn serious accountability. When I have a community forum, there aren't thousands of people there, but there are people who are well-informed and have something to say. I think if we behaved irresponsibly, I think people would hear about it and they'd be looking for new people. So I'm not so sure. It is a risk. Anytime you do anything new, it's a risk. But I think it has potential for us to have a better process that's more inclusive. Right now, one of the distinctions about the legislature is substantially one party is more urban and one more rural. That reflects in different priorities, and that's not, in my mind, reaching all 60 representative districts, which have important needs.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kinmer, I appreciate you bringing this forward. It's a interesting concept, and I think it is worth a discussion. I remember being in the minority, and it's not always a pleasant experience. Remember being referred to as irrelevant and by the then majority leader, but I wish there was a good solution to that, and I think the solution is more in the lines of personal responsibility and statesmanship and trying to, because we're always going to have disagreements. But where I differ from your perspective, I think, is much along the lines of others, is that I see that, our democracy, has been set up on the tenets of the majority rules. The majority makes the decision, and the consequence of having a supermajority or of 40 votes seems like it puts the power not in the majority but in a minority to basically control the agenda instead of the majority. So a majority can be defeated by a minority. I guess fundamentally my idea of what I think democracy is that you have a good discourse and you vote and a majority pleases the most and should be the rule of the day. Yeah. And so I have a hard time deviating from that tenet, I guess.
If I may respond, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holvey, I guess glad to hear you have a good memory and that you remember some of those experiences. And frankly, I think some of those experiences are being reflected in some of the current activity. So I appreciate that. And I think we need to learn from our experience. A couple of things. As I recall my research, about seven other states have larger than simple majority requirements for passage and bills. So I think that's an issue. I also think, I kind of ballparked 40 as a number. But I think in part it was a reflection on the issue that I think we don't want a tyranny of the minority either. And that's why I chose two-thirds. Out of a House of 60, you still got to get 40, or you have to have 20 in opposition. I think hopefully it would raise the bar and people would step to the plate. But there's the risk that the opposite could occur.
Representative Berger.
I just have to comment briefly on making comparisons with California legislature and their structure here, because having sat through one of their assembly sessions and realizing that they don't have to vote on any bill, it changes everything in terms of trying to get votes. I was so shocked that my mouth dropped and remains there, that they could simply duck a vote. That and term limits makes them seem quite chaotic and unproductive. Those two things alone, and I would never want to compare our work with that kind of a structure, because those are fundamental things that I think impact it.
Mm. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the idea is intriguing, and it's producing hopefully one of the things that you intended, and that was a lot of discussion here amongst the members. I think I tend to agree more with those who are advocates of a majority vote as contrasted to a supermajority or two-thirds or three-fourths or whatever it happens to be. However, I think as we grapple with the issues and the problems that we have in legislatures, not just here in Oregon, but in general, it strikes me, one of the thoughts that I've had is that it would be nice not to have what in our case is the speaker being a political position, but a hired position, someone hired to manage the process and given the authority and power to manage the process to eliminate the some of the partisan issues, and it's partisanship whether it happens to be Republicans, Democrats, Portland versus Eastern Oregon, or pick an issue, and you can almost always find two sides, on it, and a group of people on each side. If I'm right, that the conflict, and there's a whole ton of literature on conflict in history, but if the conflict in the legislature, whatever, call it whatever we want, is something we want to get rid of, if we started at the top instead of at some other point in there, that we might get to an end point more quickly, and still preserve the ability of the system to function. One of the problems with government, democracy, anytime the people are voting on it, is it's cumbersome and slow. Sometimes it's an asset, but there are times it's not an asset. If we have a country that starts to feel its oats too much, and in the Far East, in cities with one bomb sort of thing, we need to build the politically. And this and other countries need the ability to react pretty quickly on it. too much damage is done in a very short period of time if we don't have the instability, I guess. Stability in government is something that I find, even when it works against me, I still find to be desirable that it's stable and predictable, the process that it's going to be going through. But I do appreciate your bringing, this resolution forward. I think it's an interesting discussion and one that we could benefit a lot by having more discussions about it.
I think that's well said. Thank you. Representative Dembro, and then we should probably wrap this up.
Yeah, just following on Representative Jensen's last comments, I was having a pretty dull and boring day, Representative.
That is my hallmark this year. Thank you so much.
Again, I would join those who thank you for bringing this forward. You know, it's a very thought-provoking kind of conversation, and I think it is important for us to recognize the good experience, the good in the experience of the 2011-12 session. Mm-hmm. 2009 was my first session, mm-hmm. and I was a little surprised that session, frankly, at how some of the things happened. Mm-hmm. I did hear at the time that the justification for some of that behavior was that it used to be worse. But I did find that in 11-12, just the experience of having to get co-sponsors for bills and, to actually think in those terms, I think did have a very good spillover effect into this session. I do think, though, I would agree with those who feel that it could, the kind of thing you're proposing could lead to gridlock along the lines of what we see in the U.S. Senate. The downside to that is that it really shifts a lot of power away from the legislative branch over to the executive, because we can't get things done in the legislature, in the sense in the Senate, in Congress, then everything is done through rulemaking and, temporary sorts of activities in the executive. I think that is potentially a problem. The other thing I would say is that in my first session in 2009, it's where I came to fully appreciate the fact that we have a bicameral legislature. And in a sense, having the kind of thing that you're proposing might make more sense if we had a unicameral kind of legislature where you might want to have something to really slow the process down. Having to move things through one chamber and then move them to the other chamber, I think that does provide a very useful kind of check and balance. So that's what I would add.
Thank you. Just wrap it up if sure. I can, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Jensen, Representative Dembro. I guess a couple of other thoughts. Several states do have paid executives that function as speakers or the executive leader. Didn't research that too well, although it was fascinating to me. I've had occasion to have several conversations with Phil Lang, and a quite well-respected Speaker of the House. And it was interesting to talk to him and discover that he never attended caucus meetings of either party. And I thought that was a unique sort of in line with Representative Jensen's notion of maybe a step back from the politics and more to the process. I guess another piece is it could slow or gridlock the process. I also think that sometimes, and especially like days like today and tomorrow, that sometimes our process is a little too hurried. And I think we might get a better product if we had a little more time to stew and work together rather than just steamroll forward with, I can't tell you how many amendments, well, I probably shouldn't on the record, but there are a lot of amendments. It's hard to read every word.
Your comment is very timely at this point in the session.
I think we could get maybe more deliberation, but I appreciate that. This is more discussion than I anticipated, and I think it's been very helpful, and I'm very grateful, and thank you all. And we'll continue to think about what we ought to do, if anything, different. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing this bill. We have Cappy Eaton here to testify. and then that will be it on this bill.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrett, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. You have some remarks that the League has sent in. I just have a few comments I would like to make. As I've been listening to your conversation, I was thinking back to those hot August days in Philadelphia in 1787, and wondering whether if there were a two-thirds majority, we would have ended up with a constitution at all. But I think one of the basic tenets around the world when it comes to considering democracies is that the majority rules, a simple majority. I would share with you just one experience I had in Bosnia, Bosnia Herzegovina. They were voting for their legislature, and we had to explain, the supervisors were explaining to the people who were running the elections what the rules were, and it was quite clear that they understood that. The group that I was with represented all of the NATO nations, and I was in a particular city helping to be with those elections. And the Bosnian election was going to occur the Saturday after the 2000 election in the United States. And so on Wednesday, we were all trying to find out what had happened in the United States with that particular election. And I came in from outside, and they were all gathered around the television, and they were having a discussion, and there were six Americans in this group of 60. And so they said to us, what's the matter? And we said, what do you mean? We're watching the results of the election. And we said, well, who won? And they said, we don't know. And why is it that the person who didn't get the most votes doesn't seem to be elected your president? And so we had an interesting discussion about the Electoral College, among other things. But their basic belief was that the person who gets the most votes, or the issue that gets the most votes on a simple majority, is how it works in a democracy. And so the League believes that going to a supermajority does not enhance or particularly make the decisions of the legislature any better if you have good discussion about the issues at the time than when you take a vote. You take a vote and the majority should win.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thanks, Cappy.
Thanks very much, Cappy. We'll close the public hearing on House HJR 27. We had been hoping that Representative Tomei would join us, but I guess she's still stuck in committee. So we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3455. We have several witnesses signed up. We'll start with Greg Chamoff and Mark Gamba, please.
And
that'd be great. Why don't you come forward, Jake, and kick us off.
And members, HB 3455 establishes process for electing or appointing board of directors for county service district. There is a no revenue impact. There is no fiscal statement issued yet. You do have testimony from Representative Tomei on OLIS and available to you online.
Great. Go ahead.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Jake Foster. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41. Representative Tomei is the chief sponsor of this bill, but she wasn't able to be here this afternoon, so she asked me to read her testimony. Chair Garrett, I'm writing to you in support of House Bill 3455. County service districts provide sewer, water, parks, and other services to communities around the state. The boundaries of these districts, however, do not always match the borders of the counties. Some districts are smaller than counties, and others span multiple counties. The North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, or NCPRD, is one such example from my house district. The NCPRD covers 2% of the county's landmass and serves one-third of the county's population. Residents of the Parks and Recreation District pay taxes to the district, and it is currently governed by the county commissioners, who are elected countywide. House District 3455 would allow residents of a county service district to form a governing body comprised of residents from their district. If residents can gather enough signatures, the voters will have a choice to elect a board made up of people in the district rather than outside the district, as is currently the case. Greg Chamoff from Milwaukee will be testifying in support also, and he will be able to answer any questions the committee might have. Sincerely, Carolyn Tomei.
All right, thanks very much, Jake. Any questions before we move on? All right, thank you for being here. Greg, Mark, why don't you come up?
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Greg Chamoff from Milwaukee, the Dogwood City of the West. It's a pleasure to be back in front of old friends and to have the opportunity to make some new ones. Because from time to time I do appear in front of you in a representative capacity, let me make very clear that the hat I am wearing today is mine and mine alone, and I am not representing anyone. I was pleased to be able to help some of my neighbors bring this issue into your process, but the views that I am providing today are entirely my own. Councillor Gamba will be able to share the views of his constituency. To start with, the bill that you have in front of you is much too large a solution for the problem that is asked to be addressed. The bill that you have in front of you would deal with any county service district that is not the solution that is needed for this problem. The problem before you is that there is a county service district that covers a very small portion of the county, the northeastern sliver of Clackamas County, essentially that abuts the city of Portland. The folks, however, who govern that district are the county commissioners, and they live in Lake Oswego, Wilsonville, West Lynn, Molalla, and one lives within the district. So that the folks who are deciding how the tax dollars are to be spent in the district come from all of the county and not from the district. So this is an issue something akin to taxation without representation. The goal of the solution being sought is to have a process through which the residents of a county parks and recreation district, and that alone, could, if they gathered enough signatures, have a vote that would allow them to decide whether to keep the current governance structure in which others govern them or whether they have their own elected body. For those of you at the southern end of the Willamette Valley, if you would like an example, in contrast, there is the excellent Willamette Lane Parks and Recreation District that serves a subset of Lane County. It has its own elected board, elected by its own taxpayers. The situation for the North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, however, would be the equivalent if Willamette Lane were run by the Lane County Commissioners and not the residents of the Willamette Lane District itself. Thank you.
Chair Garrett, committee members, thank you. Mark Gamba, City of Milwaukee Councilor. We've recently been having conversations amongst the City Council about de-annexing with the North Clackamas Parks District for this very reason. We've had a number of issues over the years, both of maintenance and of creation of parks. We have five park areas currently needing master planning, and we don't have the funds to do it ourselves, and can't really get much attention out of the Parks District to deal with it. This solution would create an opportunity for us to have more of a representation, more of a say in what happened in the Parks District. Milwaukee comprises, I believe, the majority of the parks in the North Clackamas Parks District are in the city of Milwaukee, and yet we have zero say over how they're run. So this system would solve that problem neatly without us de-annexing and then losing the sort of efficiencies of scale, I guess, that the park district creates, where more parks can be served by the same staff than would be within the city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you. Let me, by way of explanation, let me see if I've got this right. You have a parks district that is countywide in Clackamas? No.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, it is a county service district in that the county government is the governing body for the district, but geographically, the district is only the top northeast part of the county.
And did I understand that most of the parks that are in this particular section are in the city of Milwaukee? Is that what I understand?
Yes, as a count of parks, I think if you measure it by acreage, that's probably not the case.
And Milwaukee doesn't maintain these parks. They're part of the county. And so what you want is, if I get this right, the ability to form some sort of a special district around these parks rather than the county service district? I'm not quite getting what we're doing here. What you want.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, in effect, that's correct, yes. The goal is to have what would be, in effect, a governance like a special district. The Willamma Lane Park and Recreation District is a special district, mm-hmm. and it has its own elected representatives from among its taxpayers. And it's that model that is the goal of House Bill 3455.
Bubba?
You say that model. Why not a special district? Is this some sort of a hybrid thing that isn't, that you envision? I mean, we have county government, we have city government, we have special districts. Is this a new thing you're proposing here? That,
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, yes, sort of.
I love that answer.
Your legal advisors, with whom I would not argue, have said that as the law currently works, there is not a process for converting a county service district into the functional equivalent or the governing board equivalent of a special district at the request of the people who reside there. That could be done if there were the cooperation of the county governing board, but there isn't an option for the people themselves to choose self-governance. And so this is essentially an add-on to county service districts for, at least this goal would be, park and recreation districts to have self-governance.
One more question. Is there anything that would prevent the city of Milwaukee from saying we're out of this parks district and we're going to take care of our own parks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, no. I don't want to speak for Councilor Gamba or his constituents, but my expectation is that, or experience is that regional solutions tend to provide better results Regional solutions without representation are not a good result. So certainly there is the option for the city of Milwaukee to take its parks and go home. I believe that the preferred solution is to have Milwaukee part of the larger region, with everyone in that region being able to make decisions for that region's parks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Dembrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I'm familiar with the Tualatin Hills Parks and Rec. And is that the model that you're seeking? And how was that formed in the first place? Was that originally city or county services that became reconstituted?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembrough, I don't know for sure. I believe that that is itself a special district, not a county service district. And if one were to have the opportunity to start over and select a governance model, I think there might be advocates for the special district governance model because of its ability for self-governance. We certainly don't mean to be suggesting that county service districts are a bad thing. You know, when a county service district covers, for example, as is the case in Washington County, with clean water services, where you have a true countywide operation, it makes a great deal of sense for there to be a county service district. But the issue here is a district that is a very small part of a county.
Representative Kennemer and then Representative Barnhart.
Just if I could, kind of going back to Representative Berger's question, I think part of the difficulty here is that there are a number of these parks, I think three or four of the five parks that are within the city limits. The problem is that you have the larger area of about 100,000 unincorporated urban people living. And so that's how that district, and that ends up being, that district represents a little over a third of the population of the county. So it gets a little difficult. I have a little background here. I helped do the major improvements for the main park and when I was county commissioner. And I'm trying to reflect, I guess, we have two county commissioners who will testify. I also believe that there were substantial monies put into those parks by the county, and that creates another issue that makes this thing even more complicated. How do you figure that out?
Mr. Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions and then maybe a comment. You indicated that the bill is larger than you need. Is there an amendment proposed to shrink it to the right size?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, not yet. We were looking for, I think, your signal of interest in such an amendment before taking the resources of the Office of Legislative Counsel. A suitable amendment would be to put after the phrase county service district an additional phrase that says that provides park and recreation services. That would take the bill down to only county service districts that provide park and recreation.
Is that line 8 of the bill? Is that?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was only able to print the HTML version of the bill, which regrettably does not have lines, but it would, for example, be in the in Section 2, Subsection 1.
Right.
As the governing body of a county service district that provides park and recreation services. Your administrator was kind enough to hand the bill to me, and the answer to your question is yes.
Okay, thank you. Further question?
Yeah, thank you. I'm trying to get at a topic that I'm not very familiar with. County Service District, I assume this district has some kind of way of raising money, maybe a property tax or something else?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, there is a property tax imposed on the property within the district. I believe it's 54 cents per thousand.
And I need to follow up if I could. And I take it, because of what you've said, that the County Commission serves as the Board of Directors, and they're the ones that make
write the budget, manage the place within the rules of the county, I assume propose tax changes in the district. Apply only to the district.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I don't recall the commissioners having suggested any tax changes, but if there were suggested tax changes, it would come from the commissioners. And while I have the opportunity, I also want to make clear that the interest in having the ability to elect one's own representative should not be taken as a criticism or a dislike of the individuals who are performing the role. We were all very pleased with the work that Representative Kenemer did when he was a commissioner. Commissioner Savas, from whom you will hear, is a resident of the district, and if there were an opportunity to vote for Commissioner Savas as a director of the Parks District, I would be very pleased to do so. But it's really the issue of electing one's own representatives that's at the core of this.
I'm going to be kind of blunt if I could. Is this a theoretical representational issue, or is there some significant policy problem that you seek to get to through changing the way in which this area is governed? I'm not at all familiar with the county or this district. Is there some policy thing that the city or that you personally would like that isn't happening because the commissioners aren't doing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think perhaps that, and I don't want to speak for Councillor Gamba, but I think that he and I may have different views on this. My expectation is that the representatives of the City of Milwaukee believe that there would be better park service if the governing body were made up of residents of the Parks District itself rather than individuals who do not live within the district. Speaking as a citizen, which I am, I think the Parks District is doing a fine job. I don't have a problem with the way it's being governed, other than I don't like being governed by people who are elected by people who aren't me. I'd like very much to elect, to be able to vote for my neighbors to run my neighborhood rather than having people from outlying areas do so.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answers.
All right. Thank you both very much. Since Representative Wisdom is here from committee, we're going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 3455. We'll reopen that in a minute. First, we're going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2328. And invite Representative Wisnant to testify, please.
And members, House Bill 2328 requires a Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Commission on Black Affairs, Commission on Women, and Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs to meet at least annually in joint session to consider and act on issues of mutual concern.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs and Honorable Committee members. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant, House District 53. Mr. Chair, I have a good bill, a simple bill, and a necessary bill. Sometimes we pass bills that are not necessary. This is a necessary bill. The bill is sponsored by all the representatives who are serving on the Oregon Advocacy Commissions. There's four of them. These commissions do good work. They're very important to the governor's staff and to represent us. And they meet jointly and at least annually and talk about issues affecting communities of color, women in Oregon, but they cannot conduct official business at these meetings because of ORS Chapter 185 does not recognize joint meetings of the commission as part of their statutory functions. This bill gives them that function. So you're going to hear from a member and one by phone. I think it's going to have benefits because they can talk together, exchange ideas, and I think that's necessary because they're all independent meetings, so this will give them a joint opportunity to officially meet, make record, and make suggestions for Crosstail. So that's the bill. Hope you'll work it, and so they can start sharing information and networking as we should in these sort of committee meetings.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? All right. We will hear from them shortly.
Thank you very much.
For now, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2328 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3455. Have Commissioner Ludlow and Commissioner Savas, please.
I hope I can be heard on this. Good afternoon, Chair Garrett and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Ludlow. I'm chairman of the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners. You read sometimes in the Oregonian about our Clackamas County Board of Commissioners, but here's a fact. 97% of the time, we vote 5-0, and this is on one of them right here. It was 5-0 that I come before you today. I'm here on behalf of the entire commission to oppose HB 3455. which will establish a process for electing boards of commissioners for county service districts. Clackamas County operates 9 county service districts, and we do it very well, I might add, covering a broad range of services, both in unincorporated and incorporated Clackamas County, such as sewer, parks district, 4-H, library district. Districts are often means of providing economy of scale that cities cannot provide on their own. Yeah, it would substantially benefit all residents. Having been a mayor of a Oregon city, it is disconcerting sometimes to create these things like wonderful parks and know that there's many people outside of the city that come to enjoy those. I believe that's one of the reasons why Milwaukee agreed that this would be a great idea so more people would have to pay for the usage of these parks. The Board of County Commissioners are ideally suited to serve as governing boards of county service districts. They're able to see competing needs and balance priorities for the benefit of all residents. It's interesting, there is a tax in this district, North Clackamas Parks and Recreation, and they're living within it, but just barely. And in fact, the advisory board said they'd like to go out for more money, but it isn't exactly the climate to do that at right now. I think the district and those people testifying today that are part of it forget that Clackamas County paid $2 million for the Aquatic Center. Clackamas County, not the North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District. Clackamas County paid $2 million for the new Mount Hood View Park in Happy Valley, also in this district. Those are huge money items that they couldn't have come up with the money for in this district. The governance structure that allows the county to do this is leveraged in order to meet the objectives of the special districts. For example, the county and North Clackamas Parks work together to do the things I just mentioned. The bill before you today would remove the board's voice in a decision on whether or not to convert a county service district into an independent district. It's also, confusingly, creates another kind of independent district, which statutes already provide for one, and I believe Representative Berger really did address that. The bill does not address how budgeting, management, or any sort of transition, I think that was mentioned too, would ever take place, leaving a confusing muddle of which parties would have to negotiate. Clackamas County Commission has seen special districts become mired in minor but contentious issues. We don't want another Clackamas Water Board, believe me. As volunteer electeds, as proposed, people lack time and resources to devote to significant issues, and the narrow scope of their purview prevents them from anticipating the broader impact of decisions on the community at large, and we try to look at that very carefully. For these reasons, we believe that creating a mechanism to make it easier for a volunteer board to take over a county service district would lead to less effective and efficient government. It also sets a very dangerous precedent, and I think the AOC will speak to that. I think what's most disconcerting as county commission chair is this. We were blindsided on this. We had no idea about this bill until it was accidentally revealed to us. Now, every year we throw a legislative dinner where we invite all of our legislators, and Carolyn Tomei was there, and that was wonderful. And one of the things she said, which we'd like to hear, is anything that's going to affect this county government, we're going to let you know. We're going to be good partners. We're going to share information. We said the same thing. We'd be there for you. We'd be involved with you. We never heard anything about this, nor have we heard remonstrances from the city of Milwaukee or any of their members about how poorly this is being operated, how unfair it is. I think it's incredibly interesting that that they stand before you or sit before you and say, we don't like people to represent us and or handle taxes if they don't live in the district. Well, that's the very body you're sitting on. You don't live in my district, some of you. I believe one of you do, Bill. You don't live in my district. But I accede to the fact that you do represent us with great vigor, not just your own district, but the good and welfare of this entire state. It's the same with county government.
We believe we represent everybody, and we prove it. In fact, Commissioner Savas has recently proposed, and we adopted, a splitting up our county into five different parts, at which times we rotate 6 months from each district to try to learn more about those districts. It's not that I don't know Clackamas County. I was born there. Do I have a great affinity and love for it? I do. Do I feel we're fair? I do. But it's the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Hoyle.
I'll wait for any questions.
Thank you very much for speaking to us today, and we really appreciate your perspective. And I would just like to make a comment to the point of having good open communication, especially when concerning other people's districts. For instance, I found out that part of the priority of your county commission was to stop a project in my district, and I hadn't heard from your county commission about that, and that would be the hospital in Junction City. Now, you have since made this not a top priority, but what I would say is we will certainly, as we pass bills, you know, if I were to sponsor something that would affect Clackamas County, I would reach out to you. I would also say that in the future, if you're doing something that affects somebody's district, one of us, that you would also reach out and offer us that courtesy. But again, I so appreciate that you're here.
Chair Garrett and Vice Chair Representative Hoyle, that was an interesting way that came about because, as you may know, we have a huge health, housing, and human services department, and they have their own lobbyists. They came through with some recommendations, and we had no idea the net effect of that, and I agree that the county board did vote unanimously for that. But after being corrected, I'm sure by you, Representative, we found the errors of our way and since corrected that. Thank you for noticing.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Savas, please.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Paul Savas. I'm a Clackamas County Commissioner and a resident of Oak Grove. Chair Ludlow just spoke to you today on behalf of the Clackamas County Commission. I am speaking to you today on a personal level. I am the only commissioner who is a resident within the North Clackamas County Parks and Recreation District. I also reside within two special service districts, namely Oak Lodge Water and Oak Lodge Sanitary. I serve as an elected commissioner on the Oak Lodge Water from 2001 to 2005, and I serve as an elected director of Oak Lodge Sanitary from 2003 to 2011. All service districts have ongoing issues and challenges. I have had the privilege and the task of solving long-standing disputes both at Oak Lodge Sanitary and most recently the sewer dispute between the City of Milwaukee and the County Service District Number 1. That was a 25-year dispute. The majority of the population within the North Clackamas County Parks and Recreation District lives in unincorporated Clackamas County. As the governing body of North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, the Board of County Commissioners has appointed a North Clackamas County Parks and Recreation District Advisory Board made up of citizens and a city councilor from each of the two cities, those being Happy Valley and Milwaukee. The Parks District is currently preparing a master plan that will address financial challenges, governance options, programs, services, and facilities. Because the master plan is not yet complete, the findings and recommendations have not yet been shared. As both a 27-year resident of the district and now a county commissioner, I have assured residents and entities that the public processes and solutions will be forthcoming. This one is kind of new to me. I learned this very recently that that this issue that Mr. Chamoff has expressed. I have given my word and commitment that all those interested parties will be part of a solution. I respectfully request that you remove HB 3455 from consideration and allow us to complete the master planning process. Leadership from the county can help garner citizen support for any funding changes that the district needs and help improve the governance representation the cities and the citizens rightfully deserve. This is a local issue that must be solved locally. I am concerned that legislative intervention will further polarize the city and unincorporated divide. It is my belief that HB 3455 will disrupt the delicate care and handling necessary to solve challenges now and into the future. I thank you for your time today. I would love to answer some questions on this. I heard a number of comments, and I would be happily field this because, I'm a member of the district. I'm very familiar with districts and representation, and I really believe this can be solved, and I'm available. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you. You mentioned that you have an advisory committee to I guess, advise the county commissioners in this case about the operations of a particular service, county service district. So do the members of that advisory committee all live within that particular service district?
Chair Garrett, Representative Holby, yes.
So the park, the advisory committee, for instance, in a particular park district would all be residents within that park district?
Correct.
Thank you. And one follow-up?
Yes.
Do you follow the advice of your advisory committee? Always?
Well, I would say in my short term of 2 years, we have, Chair Garrett, Representative Holby, I think as near as I know in the 2 years, there's probably been one exception. But as far as an issue, which that issue is not really related to parks and recreation, I would say that we also have a budget committee as well, which follow that. And the district is in financial trouble because of cost outpacing the resources. And therefore, we're looking at going to the voters, is obviously in a very difficult climate, very difficult time, and it will require a lot of ginger care to try to get some of the inequities that are within the district, some of the monies that have been appropriated here. And there's some winners and losers, and that's why it's going to take some delicate care and balance.
If I may,
please,
Chair Garrett and Representative Holby. We have over 30 advisory groups, and it is really tough sometimes to read it all, let alone digest it all, and certainly understand it all, and let alone adopt what they might recommend. But this particular group is paid close attention to. We have multiple staff persons that are there at every one of those meetings that certainly hand-deliver their desires to the county board. The toughest thing, like it is in any district right now, is show me the money. And they are falling behind simply because of costs. And the fact that they adopted the trolley trail, which is kind of a famous trail from Portland to Oregon City, they adopted that into the part of the Parks and Rec Board area. And it is heavy maintenance, I think, more than they thought they had. So, yeah, they will have to probably go out for more money. But like I emphasized, it's nice to have the big brother county around when you have to delve out $2 million shots to make the park system better.
Chair Garrett, if I may, just want to just maybe give a perspective of the county service districts. Washington County was raised. Washington County has both. They have an ORS 451 and they have an ORS 266, which is a parks district. However, near as I know, none of those districts, the ORS 451, which is Clean Water Services, does not cover the entire county for the very reason that sewer is to the urban area and sewer does not apply to the rural area. 94%, I believe, is a number that is urban in Washington County, and 65% in Clackamas County. So naturally, we have over the years, Clackamas County has tried to merge, and that's another issue, is trying to merge the county parks, which primarily was made up of geographically largely the rural part of the Clackamas County. So as we try to merge some of these assets and try to get economies of scale, I now learn we have one city that may be interested in de-annexing, and I'm also aware that we have another city, Damascus, which wants to be included. So as we go through this master planning process, we can work out some of these details, and I don't see why we would not be amenable to listening to all the parties and solving this locally.
Representative Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To your knowledge, what has been the record of support for this part of the county, in terms of the relative allocations of the county's parks budget going to different parts of the county? Would you say that this part of the county, Ms. Savas, you may know best since you're from that part, has been well represented in, the budget allocations, or less so? Or?
I would probably say from a budgetary standpoint that it's been relatively equal. I've been a commissioner for 2 years. I've been through two budget cycles, and we're in the midst of our third. So I would say that it's been equitable from that standpoint. I would probably say that there's those that feel disenfranchised throughout the county, whether it's rural or urban, and we're trying to solve those. And I think really what we have in play here is as the county's been growing, we've been trying to merge these assets. We've been you know, again, carefully moving these assets around to try to get some equity within the area. But again, the largest portion of the North Clackamas County Parks Recreation District is unincorporated. It's an existing community, a long-standing community, housing going all the way back to the early 1900s. They don't have much in the way of parks, and they are somewhat subsidizing the newer cities that are growing quite a bit because they have SDCs which pay for assets, and those assets are becoming so numerous in the newer areas, perhaps the more affluent areas, but yet that maintenance cost goes up and up and up, and it's being shared or subsidized by the larger portion, which again feels disenfranchised because they don't have the assets, but yet they're paying for the maintenance and care.
All right, commissioners, thank you both.
Thank you, Chair Garrett. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If I could just add to Representative Dimbro's question, there have been very substantial investments in that area. One of them is we have, and Chair Ludlow alluded to those back actually beginning prior to my tenure. So that would put it back 16 years ago, I guess, was the beginnings of a substantial swim center. And I'm not sure, but I think the contribution to date, besides we did the remodel.
Yeah.
We're at about $4.5 million into that, plus ongoing maintenance and operations, and there's a fee collection system and stuff. Then there are the substantial ballparks that are adjacent to the city. That was $2.5 million. I'm sorry, these numbers are not clear in my mind. I think I've repressed some of this information. and then, you know, work out in the East County. And part of the problem in this area is a unique development that we have substantial urban development in non-cities. So we have some smaller cities around this area. I don't know, in the North Clackamas Parks, there must be, 120,000 to 140,000 people in that district?
110 or something like that.
110 in the district? Okay. So, and the city of Milwaukee would account for 22, and Happy Valley would account for,
18.
Another 12 or 14. So you can see that a lot of these are urban unincorporated people, and their tax rate is dramatically lower than the city rates too, which is part of why this subsidy has occurred.
All right, we have two more witnesses on this bill, so thank you, gentlemen, both for your time and for being here this afternoon. We appreciate your testimony.
Chair Garrett, thank you, representatives.
Jim McCauley and Mike Eliason, please.
Jim McCauley representing Washington County. Chair Garrett, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity today. I don't want to speak, you know, really beyond what's already been said on this. The county opposes this bill as it stands right now. And even if it was trimmed up and defined more tightly, I'm guessing we would likely to oppose it as well, because we just view it as a poor governance bill. We don't think there's any particular value to be gained out of what we currently have within our county service district program at the time. A couple of comments specifically about Washington County. We have four different county service districts, and one essentially extends throughout the county as well as beyond, and that's Clean Water Services. That represents essentially a population of a little over 530,000 people. And it's both water as well as the sewer side of things. And the story for Clean Water Services is somewhat interesting. And the reason why, when we talk about governance and the importance of efficiency and having a board oversight over this, is prior to Clean Water Services in the early, prior to 1970, the county's population was roughly around 140,000 people. And at that time, they received sewer service from 11 different cities, 23 sewer districts, 9 private developments, and in the city of Beaverton alone, there were 16 sewer systems and 4 wastewater treatment facilities, okay? Fair amount of complexity, fair amount of overlap, duplicity, et cetera. And
part of the reason why Clean Water Services formed, or actually in their former life it was Unified Sewers Agency, USA, was to bring all of that together and make sure that the planning was done, make sure that there was cohesive decision making throughout all the financial tools that you need to run that kind of a program. So that's just one county service district. Now, the other three are pieces of the district. One is North Bethany. We have another one that's an urban road maintenance district, as well as a enhanced sheriff patrol district as well. So each of those fall under the guise of the governance of the county. It's a program that's worked well, and it's allowed for the type of governance and the type of coordination that you would expect out of a county when not only going through the budgetary process, but the overall planning and the elections, et cetera. So there's nothing in this bill as it stands right now, and there's nothing really, even if you were to trim it up, that we see would be of any particular benefit for government, so we would oppose. Thank you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. In the interest of time, I will adopt the testimony we heard earlier from Mr. McCauley and the two commissioners from Clackamas County. Simply say a couple of words very briefly. AOC is opposed to this bill, and as Mr. McCauley also said, both as written and really don't see the need to trim it any further. It essentially just sets up a third process, another route for creating sort of a hybrid, as Representative Berger said, a hybrid process for a special district with different thresholds, 5% threshold instead of 15%. And we essentially heard a circular argument earlier, as far as I can tell, where there's already a process for the city to remove property within the district if they so choose. But they want the financial structure of the county service, regional county service district, and even to some extent are comfortable with how it's being governed now. So I'm not really sure where we go with this. I'm not really sure what the problem is here that we're trying to solve. I also want to note for the record that Multnomah County has taken a position to oppose this. They wanted to be here but had to step out to a different meeting. With that, I'll close and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you both. Any questions, comments? Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3455, and we'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2328. Is this woman here? Okay. We'll try that again in a few minutes. For now, Mr. Manning.
Chair Garrett, Vice Chair. My name is James Manning. I'm here from Eugene, Oregon, and I'm representing the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, a part of the Oregon Advocacy Commission. And I come in on behalf of House Bill number, I have a little case of the old timer, so I had to put on my enhancers, House Bill 2328, and urge your support of the bill. I think that is very important because of some of the work that all of the advocacy commissions do independently, as well as having an opportunity to meet jointly formally in order to provide solidarity in some of the things, the areas that are more common to all of us. So I am here just to ask that you really consider this bill. I think that it's very important, and it does allow us an opportunity to work together officially, as we have done so many times when bills have been put before and all of our commissions have come together to sign off on the bill, but we've not had the ability to actually formally meet in joint sessions to do these things. So.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions for Mr. Manning? Representative Hoyle.
I think I've spoken more in this committee hearing than I have the entire time that I've been on this committee. But first of all, I want to thank you. I'm very honored to have Mr. Manning as a constituent and really appreciate you coming all the way here. Also appreciate your service. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your feedback. It is meaningful when people who serve on the commission come to us and tell us what would make this more effective. So thank you for that.
Vice Chair Hall, I really do appreciate your comments. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't know if that would work against me.
Good point.
Certainly I wanted to make sure that I acknowledge that she is my representative and she's been doing a great job. But I, again, ask your support for this very important bill.
Thank you. Representative Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. First of all, my sympathies for your having Vice Chair Cornell as your representative. But that aside, I'm very much supportive of this bill, and I'm curious to know what some of the topics of conversation have been. You know, when you've been meeting on an annual basis, because there, you know, I'm sure there are so many areas of overlap among the different advocacy commissions. I know. Lucy, I knows that I have a particular interest in the challenges faced by new Oregonians, immigrants to Oregon, who, you know, you can find new Oregonians who would relate to the Commission on Black Affairs or Hispanic Affairs or Asian Affairs and or women. Would that be one of the topics that is covered in the overlap meeting, and what might be some others?
Chair, Representative, I would say that while each of the particular commissions have uniqueness to their particular bodies or people that they represent, at times it is a common theme for us to come together in support of those bills or those ideas that represents the communities of color as a whole. At this point, we're not able to function in that capacity. And again, as this bill will allow us to function in that capacity where it would be a joint expression of solidarity in support of things that are common to communities of color. I'm not sure if that quite answered the question.
Just wondering what might be some other examples.
Well, so some of the examples are that, for example, this particular House bill that was placed, it came out of one of the other, the Asian Pacific Affairs, and all of the representatives and all of the commission chairs got together in support of this bill because we thought it would be the right thing to do. It sends a message of unity, for one, and I think that is the main subject of this, is to show that we are that we have unity when it comes to issues that are dealing, even though they're so complex, there are some common goals in, that we're trying to achieve. And is there, of course, you know, there's always strength in numbers.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Manning, good to see you again. I want to first thank you for your past service in the Army.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate you serving our country. And but I have a question about the bill specifically. The bill requires, and I'm stuck on that word. It requires the advocacy commissions to meet annually, as opposed to allowing them to do that. And I'm just contemplating, you know, as we. Can you foresee a situation where perhaps all the advocacy commissions may not want to meet annually, or for some other reason can't, or I don't know what the budgetary constraints are on the participants and those sorts of things? So I'm just kind of curious why it should be require instead of allow.
Representative, I really appreciate that question. I think that particular language was put in based on the limited resources that are available to all of the individual advocacies, perhaps to just strengthen the language of the bill itself. I think that there is an agreement that we would like to function on certain items together. But as a requirement, perhaps that was more geared towards a financial perspective. Because each one of our particular commissions do operate on a very limited budget. And if we had the extra, and this, I think this is what this actually is about, is to give us the ability and the resources in order to meet on a formal basis. So required is a very interesting word, and I would have to defer that particular answer or that answer to that question over to Representative Wisnett for a specific answer.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Mr. Manning, thanks very much for your patience and for your testimony. We're going to try and reach our last witness.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello, Judge Birch.
Yeah.
Hi, you are before the committee. I will turn it over to the chair.
All right, thank you.
Good afternoon, Judge Birch. This is Chris Garrett with the House Committee on Rules, and we're calling to take your testimony on House Bill 2328.
All right, thank you very much. Is it all right if I go ahead?
Please go.
All right, thank you. Well, Chair Garrett and Vice Chair Hicks and Hoyle, my name is Jean Birch, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Oregon Commission for Women. And I want to thank you for letting me call you. I'm calling you from Fossil in downtown beautiful Wheeler County, Oregon. I'm encouraging you to support House Bill 2328, which will allow the advocacy commissions, to meet annually and act on issues of mutual importance. I attended my first joint forum last year, and it was very useful to meet the other advocacy commissioners and discuss issues that were of mutual interest. Even though each commission has their own individual statutory assignments, they also collaborate on issues that that everyone shares. And so your support of House Bill 2328 will help to strengthen the important work of the advocacy commissions and, of course, the Commission on Women, and on behalf of the citizens of Oregon. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Judge. And as Representative Holley pointed out, this actually requires an annual meeting, doesn't just allow it. I assume that is still okay with you?
Yes, that's what I guess that I probably, and semantics got me, that's what I do want, is it to require we have the annual meeting.
Got it. Any questions for Judge Birch?
I
Representative Dembro is going to ask a question.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge Birch. How many times a year does the Commission on Women meet currently?
They meet every other month, so they meet four times a year, I guess.
Okay. So presumably one of these meetings could take the place of your regular meeting.
Well, of course, you know, since I travel into the eastern part of the state, that would probably be very beneficial for myself, because it's a 8-hour trip to get there for the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much. Representative Holby.
Thank you. Thank you. I know you stressed the you want to be required to do this, and oftentimes we get criticized for mandating other bodies to do things. And I'm kind of curious. I'm still a little bit troubled by why the legislature would require you instead of just allowing you to do that or to meet.
As I understood it, that to be able to take official action, you have to have it as part of your statutory requirements. And so I guess that's where the word require would come in. I think it's that if there is something that everyone would like to vote on, that they'd be allowed to do it and be legally able to.
Thank you for that explanation. I still wonder if you wouldn't be able to take action even if you were just allowed to meet if the statute defined it that way.
Judge Birch, this question has been clearly eating away at Representative Holby all afternoon. And I think that we're going to have to take this up maybe with legislative counsel to get clarity, but we appreciate your testimony very much.
Well, and if it means that we're just allowed to do it, I certainly support that. I think that's the issue.
All right. Anything further? All right. Thank you very much, Judge.
All right. And thank you for allowing me to come in by phone.
you.
We appreciate it.
Okay. Bye now.
Goodbye.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I'd like to say that I think they should be required to meet once a year. It's that's the whole essence of this, is that for these advocacy commissions to be fully functional, they need to meet with one another at least once a year. Again, this need not be an additional meeting. This can be in place of an existing meeting, and it seems totally appropriate, and I would say necessary.
I agree.
Well, I may disagree at some point.
Count your votes.
You are more than welcome to bring us further illumination on this point, Representative Holbert. For now, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2328, and there's no further business for the committee, so we're adjourned.